Good evening, everybody. This is Christina Turin. Tonight's call is going to be a conference call where we have quite a few speakers here. So hopefully we will finish in the 2 hours that we have allotted, but we might go over a little bit, and I'm sure if we do go over, it will be because we are very much into a very intriguing conversation. This conference call is one that I've been looking forward to for many, many months now. We're going to open the evening with about a 20-minute talk on ethics by Barbara Crowe. Barbara is the director of the music therapy at Arizona State University. She has been teaching our international harp therapy students for over a decade now, and with her expertise, not only do we have so many more skills to add to our harp therapy tool bags, but we also have a liaison with all of the music and sound practitioners through her. I will give you much more of a detailed introduction when she speaks on her topic of the evening on music therapy. But for now, I would like to turn over the mic to Barbara so that she can talk more about the importance of ethics in its many forms with patients, with the law, and with our colleagues. So, Barbara, I'd like to welcome you right now. You have the mic.
Thank you, Tina. Ethics is a particularly important topic, I feel, for any profession, particularly ones that work in the healthcare field. We have represented tonight a number of approaches of using music to provide therapeutic benefit, healing benefit, some of which are well-formed as professions, others are in the process, and still others are really in the beginning stages. But thinking about and working through ethical beliefs and standards is important for all of us throughout our development as professions and particularly through our work with clients. Ethics can be a very difficult topic to talk about because we get terms mixed up, I think. You know, the broad topic of ethics basically is our belief system or a standard that we adhere to help us determine what is right or correct or wrong behavior. And we certainly think of this in our personal lives. Tonight we're going to think about it in terms of our professional lives. Professional ethics is what we're going to focus on. These are the principles and expectations of conduct for the members of a given profession or given approach using music towards clients or patients, peers, the public, and each other as professionals. And all those, I think, are extremely important as we talk about the emerging applications of music and health, sound and health, that's really beginning to happen in the last 10 to 15 years. Now, most professions develop at some point a code of ethics. This is really the list of rules, the things you can and cannot do, what we hold as being important to this profession as we work and deal with the public. But a code of ethics is not the only thing we need in the profession. We need also to be working from an ethical standpoint. So it's not just following the rules, but it's keeping the principles of ethics in mind every moment that we are working as a professional in our area or our discipline. Ethics are formed by our personal values, our religious beliefs, by laws, by community standards, by broad code of what it is to be a professional. And I want to urge that I think all the disciplines that we're going to be talking about tonight, we are professionals and you should be acting as, we all should be acting as professionals. And I think thinking about ethics and thinking it more broadly than just following a code is the way that we're going to maintain that professional status. There are behaviors regulated by law for professionals working with the public, particularly vulnerable individuals like children, people with disabilities, the elderly who are no longer able to make decisions for themselves. And it's extremely important that everybody working in whichever discipline becomes familiar with those laws in your area, your local laws, your state laws in particular. Many states now, for example, have requirements that you must report, for example, any indication of child abuse or elder abuse, which is also very important. You need to know what your responsibilities are by the law. You need to know what you can do in terms of or cannot do in terms of furthering information to the police, etc. So I urge you all to do that, particularly as you begin to start your professional work. You know, there's lots of reasons why we don't think a lot about ethics or we don't think it's important. I think a lot of times we just don't know about it. We don't know what is expected. If you're new into a professional realm, you may not know there's specific things. And I will, before my time is up here, go over the highlights of those. So ignorance is one. We just don't know. We may just not be thinking about it in our busy worlds and our busy patient loads and everything that we have to deal with. We get careless. We don't think it's important. Or we think it's a little thing, it doesn't really matter. But if you keep ethical ideas and thinking about, I am a guardian of ethical behavior throughout my work with patients, you'll find that things will become more sharpened to you. I'll give you an example. One of my graduate students was working in a hospice, and she would go to the patients' homes and care centers where they were living. And one day she went to a care center to work with a patient she had worked with for quite some months. And when she entered the room, she noticed that the patient had a new, very prominent red ring around her neck. And she said that she would not necessarily have thought of that as a problem if we hadn't been talking about ethics. And she realized it was her ethical responsibility to investigate that or bring that to someone's attention. It may have had a perfectly innocent reason for that ring, but it looked suspiciously like a cord had been wrapped around this woman's neck. And so my students did report it, and when the care home staff member heard this, she kind of fluffed it off and said, oh, it's nothing, and that sort of thing. And my student pursued it and went higher in the organization because she ethically felt that she couldn't let the issue drop. And finally there was an investigation, and it did turn out to be nothing, which was great. But the idea was it could have been something serious, and it was her professional ethical responsibility to not only report it but pursue it to resolution. So if do nothing else in the 15-20 minutes I have tonight, I want to put that little crystal idea of every moment of my professional working day, I must be thinking of ethics and what is my ethical responsibility to my patients. Other things get in our way of poor ethical judgment or deterrent to ethical behavior. We may not have good guidelines, and that's why, of course, we write codes of ethics. We may not think ethics is important. I suppose there are people who don't care enough, have a character flaw, but none of them are in any of the therapeutic music areas, I'm sure. One real trap in thinking through ethical problem is that we believe that ethical problems can be solved with common sense. And that really is not true, because what may seem common sense may not fulfill those ethical, very strict ethical boundaries. It's also very important to keep professional ethics and your personal values and ethics separate. There are times when something may be happening that you and your own personal code of values and morals feels is not appropriate, but professionally, in a professional ethics, you really cannot interfere. For example, you cannot, if a client is saying something to you like, drinking is okay for them in their state of Alzheimer's degree. Your personal value is that it is not okay to drink. You can't report that based on your personal values, only if it would impair their health by doing it, not because you don't agree with the idea of drinking. And another thing you have to remember about ethics is there are no absolutes. Ethics is one of those gray areas of life. A lot of it depends on context. It depends on timing. It depends on who is involved. You know, one of the absolute ethical standard for all of us, of course, is just like physicians, do no harm. That is the absolute standard. It's important, but to keep that in mind and to know that none of ethical issues are easily resolved and take some effort and some time to think through. I think there are three vital areas or issues in professional ethics that everybody needs to be aware of. Yes, if you're in an organization that has a code of ethics, you should be very familiar with that. But even if not, these are the three areas that we all have to think about. The first is professional competence. Are you competent to do the job that you've been asked to do? What does it mean if you have certification as a music therapist or certification as a therapeutic bedside musician? What is your scope of practice? What are you trained to do and what are you not trained to do? We have to think about why would we be working in an area that we don't have competence. What would prompt someone to do that? Well, the first and obvious is that's the job they've been offered. All the disciplines talk extensively about not calling ourselves what we are not. I do not call myself a therapeutic bedside musician. I definitely do not call myself a harp therapist since I can't play the harp. And you all know and have heard that music therapy has certain credentials, which you're going to hear about in a little bit later, and you can't call yourself or what you're doing music therapy without that training and credentials. So really knowing what your scope of practice is, knowing what you've been trained to do, understanding what your competencies are and staying within those boundaries is the first issue of ethics. The second issue is clients' rights and therapists' responsibilities. One of the first really important area of ethics under this is patient-informed consent. In all the healthcare professions, there is a absolute ethical standard that there must be consent from the patient, or if the patient is unable to give consent, then the family or guardians or person who holds a power of attorney, that we do not sneak up on patients, we do not do things that they don't know that we're doing, and that they have to be pretty clear that they know what's happening and they have given permission. I know there's some issues in that, and we don't have time to talk about it extensively when working with comatose patients, particularly when working towards the end of life. That's an issue that perhaps each discipline who deals with those clients would have to work through in finding some kind of informed consent. It's also extremely important if you're doing research. There has to be very specific informed consent in terms of, you know, statements of what's going to happen and signatures and that kind of thing. So those of you that are working on research, and I certainly urge everybody to do that, to read up on what is involved in an informed consent document for research. Our responsibilities as professionals in our given areas certainly involve appropriate communication, working with patients in a non-judgmental, accepting way, offering all our patients and clients dignity and respect, being able to work with difficult clients, having enough self-awareness to know how that's affecting you so that you don't act out on the client or patient, trying to have the appropriate setting for your work, ensuring safety, privacy, if at all possible, and also actively terminating with a patient or client if you're ending your time with them in a way that they feel good about the interaction and can move on. The third area, in about a minute that I have left and is extremely important, is confidentiality, patient confidentiality. This is the gold standard of professional ethics, that we have an ethical obligation to protect the client's information from disclosure to anyone without express permission from the client or guardian to do so. Now, having said that, there are some exceptions to confidentiality. For example, laws that say you must report dangerous people or verbal utterances of threats and abuse and that kind of thing. But normally you just don't talk about your patients. You talk about them with other professionals working where you're working, but you don't go home and talk with your family about it or your best friend. If you're in a learning situation, then you can speak to your instructor or your mentor, because they are also under the blanket of confidentiality. A big issue that has come up recently, certainly in the student population, young student population, they've been texting all about their patients all over the country. And we had to, in music therapy, step in rather vigorously and tell them they can't tweet about what just happened with their patient. Confidentiality. And, of course, there are all the federal HIPAA laws about keeping patient records safe, confidential, and the privacy upheld, and you will need to review those also if you will be having written records of any kind. Limits to confidentiality have to do with who you can share information with, if you have to warn the public that there's a danger, and protecting the confidentiality of a child. One more area that I think is important to mention is dual relationships and boundaries. A dual relationship is where you have a two kinds of relationships with a client or patient. You're their friend and you're their therapeutic bedside musician or music therapist or whatever. I assume I don't have to say this, but with my students I have to say you don't have personal relationships with your clients. You don't date your clients. You don't have inappropriate relationships with your clients, and you need to maintain professional boundaries so you care and you're warm and you're genuine, but that you're not becoming enmeshed in the client and their problems, concerns, etc. So with that, I think my time is up. I hope this brief overview of professional ethics is helpful to you, and I'll turn it back to Tina.
Thank you so much, Barbara. You certainly gave us a lot to ponder and absorb and assimilate. We'll be returning back to you in a few moments to hear about the music therapy profession.